to tonight's program. If you haven't been there yet, you can go now or just write this down. You've got to go to this website and look at this video. It's funnyordie.com. And look at the video entitled Presidential Reunion. In the final analysis, it's a political ad. But it's alumni from Saturday Night Live who've gotten together. Well, to hell with it. Just go see it. funnyordie.com. And it's the video entitled Presidential Reunion. So I had several people email me today. And I'm surprised that they didn't put those flashing red lights on the email. You know, the spinning red lights. I used to get those all the time. Email alert. Pew, 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 pew. I thought they were kind of cool. Nobody uses those anymore. But what the excitement is about, it's an article in today's LA Times by Richard Simon, who is writing that some of Ronald Reagan's more ardent admirers are launching an effort to get his likeness, his picture, on the $50 bill in place of Ulysses S. Grant. Now, that kind of makes sense. The people pushing this are Republicans and mostly Southerners. And, of course, Grant is the general who led the Union Army to victory during the Civil War. So it'd be nice to get Grant off and put Reagan on that basis. According to Representative Patrick McHenry, you get that? That's his name. Patrick McHenry, Republican from North Carolina, who introduced legislation to make the change. He claims that polls of presidential scholars, Reagan consistently outranks Grant. Now, an earlier proposal to put Reagan on the dime in place of FDR didn't go anywhere. An effort to put Reagan on the $20 bill in place of Andrew Jackson got Tennessee lawmakers bloomers in a wad. And a 2005 move to put Reagan on the $50 bill never made it out of the House Financial Services Committee, even though Republicans controlled the House at the time. Patrick McHenry, the Republican from North Carolina, said in a letter to his colleagues seeking their support the following, quote, President Reagan is indisputably one of the most transformative presidents of the 20th century. Woo! Like President Roosevelt on the dime and President Kennedy on the half dollar, President Reagan deserves a place of honor on our nation's currency. There's a move in California and Nevada to name mountains after Reagan, too. And, of course, he already has an airport named after him and an aircraft carrier and a freeway. And that's a freeway here in Atlanta. I wonder if that's the one they're talking about, the Ronald Reagan Parkway. I don't understand that. This whole move. What is it about Reagan that makes Republicans get all wobbly? What is it? I mean, he was attractive. Maybe that's it. Maybe he was so damn cute that the Republicans just can't control themselves. I don't know. He was an actor. He was great at reading his lines. They talk about Obama using a teleprompter. Oh, give me a goddamn break. Reagan couldn't say good morning without a script. He used to carry around little 3x5 cards identifying people on his own cabinet. You know, he'd go to those morning meetings. They had a seating chart in front of him with all the names. Oh, Lord, you Republicans make my ass hurt. You really, really do. You just crack me up. So Reagan, of course, who referred to him as an amiable dunce? Was that Kissinger? I think it was Kissinger who referred to Ronald Reagan as an amiable dunce. If it wasn't, it should have been. Because Kissinger is one of those evil mass killers who is very, very bright. You know, just a genius mass murderer. Whereas Reagan, you know, I don't think Reagan ever wanted to kill anybody. He just, you know, he just, mummy. All right, mummy. What do we do next? Huh, mummy? Are we supposed to meet with Gorbachev? What's up with his head? What is that mark on his head, mummy? Reagan, those of us in a certain generation grew up with watching Ronald Reagan do the 20 Mule Team Borax commercials and the GE Theater. And, of course, the people in California understood what he was early on. Those of us around the rest of the country just saw him as a TV pitch man back in the 50s. But I've never been able to figure out that Reagan didn't do anything except plunge the country into debt that we're still paying off. That's one thing he did. He traded hostages traded weapons for hostages. He dealt with the enemy through that sick son of a bitch, Oliver North, who should have anything connected with the Marine Corps pulled out from under him. He's such a disgrace to the Corps. But Reagan was, he didn't do anything. The people around him did. All those killers and anti-communists and murderers and counter-revolutionaries and fascists, they did things. But Reagan just kind of cruised above it all. Hi, mommy. What day is it? Hey. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Of course, plans had already been made to tear down the wall, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. The Republicans always have been so bereft of any among their ranks who ever rose to anything other than mediocrity. Matter of fact, Republicans turn mediocrity into an art form. It's just astonishing. So along comes Reagan, who's real cute and tall and looks good on a horse and has an adoring wife and one good-looking son, two good-looking daughters, and then he had that crazy son of a bitch Michael that they found in a alley someplace wrapped up in swaddling clothes and took him in. Let's take this baby and But what the hell did Reagan ever do that is so profound to Republicans? And I think the answer is he just looked pretty and stayed out of the way. And that Republicans commit all sorts of damage to the United States of America and to our social systems, our social safety net. Reagan was proof that Republicans could seize power after, or get elected into office after the horror of Dick Nixon. But Reagan, Reagan sent a bunch of troops into Lebanon and refused to allow the commanders to arm them. As a result, how many United States Marines were blown to pieces at the barracks in Beirut? Of course, 2 days later, we invaded Grenada because Reagan had to have something, or the people around Reagan had to have something to cover their asses very quickly. But I don't get it. As far as Reagan being on any kind of money, maybe Monopoly money, I wouldn't mind seeing his face on a $500 Monopoly bill. That I could go along with. The rest of this, well, in a word, forget it. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. All the beaches were closed, the ocean was a red sea, but there was no one there to party them to. There was no fresh salad, cause there's hypers in the cat, Staten Island disappeared at noon. And they say the Midwest is in great distress, and NASA blew at the moon. The ozone layer has no ozone anymore, and you're gonna leave me for the car next door. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. They arrested the mayor for an illegal favor, sold the Empire State to Japan. And Oliver North married William C. Corden, gave birth to little Tehran. And the Ayatollah bought a nuclear warship if he dies and wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some human waste dumped in the Nile. But one thing is certainly true, no one here knows what to do, and I'm sick of you.
the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. The March 8th cover of Newsweek, a friend sent me a copy of it today. You ought to see it. It's a picture of Bush on the deck of the what was that aircraft carrier? USS what was the carrier where they had the mission accomplished banner? And the cover of Newsweek says the big black lettering, "Victory at last, the emergence of a democratic Iraq." And there is Bush walking toward, he's walking off the cover, but you can tell from the way this shot is taken, he's walking toward the podium. And it was written by three different writers, titled "Rebirth of a Nation." And just the opening line, "Something that looks an awful lot like democracy is beginning to take hold in Iraq. It may not be mission accomplished, but it's a start." And the person who sent this to me said, "I went out to the mail today and found this. We don't subscribe to Newsweek. My parents do. I saw the cover. I felt it had been sucker punched and kicked down the stairs. I went online and found the cover story article." You can find this at Newsweek.com. The article essentially says that things are getting better in Iraq, but the Newsweek cover implies that if democracy eventually does take root in Iraq, credit must be given to the brain-damaged fake cowboy who got the ball rolling. Toss 1.25 million people in a pile, 60% of them women and children. Stuff $750 billion in between the bodies as kindling, doused with gasoline, and set the bonfire of democracy ablaze as a warning beacon to every country in the world. Stand aside while we take what we want, or we will bring death, destruction, and freedom to your people. Someday, I might be proud to be an American, my correspondent writes, in the same way post-war Germans could be proud of their country. After the Allies bombed and burned their cities to rubble, after the war criminals had been tried, found guilty of crimes against humanity, and hanged, after the reparations had been paid, after the citizens of that nation publicly admitted what they had done, then the rebuilding could commence, and eventually it was possible for Germans to be proud of their country. But I don't think that such a someday will ever come to pass here. It would mean that Americans would tell each other the truth. It would mean that the government and media would tell the truth. It would mean that a Newsweek cover would show the truth. God damn, I hate this place. And then his name. Victory at last. Go to Newsweek.com. Check it out. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Oh, it was Clark Clifford. Several of you have informed me who referred to Reagan as an amiable dunce. Clifford, who served four different presidents and was Secretary of Defense during one of those stints. We have some breaking news for you, exclusive from Politico.com. Just in case you would like to know what the campaign is going to be like coming up very quickly. This is 2010. We have a third of the Senate that's up for election or reelection. The entire House. And things are being put in place to try to see reseize control of the House and the Senate through a campaign of lies, distortions, and just absolute garbage. And because the Republicans are so good at this, it just may win, or it just may work. According to Politico.com, the Republican National Committee plans to raise money this election cycle through an aggressive campaign capitalizing on fear of President Barack Obama, and a promise to, quote, save the country from trending towards socialism, end quote. The strategy was detailed in a confidential Republican Party fundraising presentation obtained by Politico, which also outlines how, quote, ego-driven, wealthy donors can be tapped with offers of access and tchotchkes. The presentation was delivered by Republican National Committee Finance Director Rob Bickhart to top donors and fundraisers at a party retreat in Boca Raton, Florida, on February 18th. That's according to a source at the gathering. In neat PowerPoint pages, it lifts the curtain on the often cynical terms of political marketing, displaying an air of disdain for the party's donors that is usually confined to the barroom conversations of political operatives. The presentation explains the Republican fundraising in simple terms. Quote, what can you sell when you do not have the White House, the House, or the Senate? It asks. The answer? The only thing you've got? Save the country from trending towards socialism. More of this when we come back. This is what it's going to be like, so you might as well get prepared for it. I got some more for you here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen. Things got rough. Things got tough. Things got harder than high. We were just trying to make a living in our backyard. We were born too late, died too soon. Anxiety's a terrible thing. If they can't come down, don't come at all. Cause it's a crooked piece of game. It's a crooked.
Oh, you just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So, Republican National Committee plans to raise money this election cycle by scaring or attempting to scare everybody. They're very good at this. Whatever happened to the color-coded, rainbow-flavored terrorist alerts? Remember those? Oh, Jesus. Apparently, we're all safe from terrorism now, but this is what the Republicans do. They understand the kind of psychology used by Joseph Goebbels, the big lie, fear, deception. Republicans are truly, truly America haters. But what they're going to do this election cycle is try to scare everybody into contributing money. And the big donors, the big wealthy donors that apparently they have nothing but disdain for, they just want the money. And, yeah, they'll do their bidding. But, you know, being in Congress to these Republicans is a lark. It's fun. They want to see the country destroyed. They want to be able to take credit for it 10, 15 years from now. Yeah, I was there. I moved us into a fascist theocracy. I was one of those people. Yeah, you're damn right. So the meme is going to be during the election cycle, saving the country from socialism. Now, it's Politico.com who is, has this, on their website as an exclusive, as they write, manipulating donors with crude caricatures and playing on their fears is hardly unique, but rarely is it practiced in such cartoonish terms. They say Democrats raised millions off George W. Bush in similar terms. Okay, I'll let that stand. But, of course, the obvious answer to that, I would think, would be that, never mind. They can figure it out if they want to. Anyway, in the PowerPoint presentation, one page headed The Evil Empire pictures Obama as the Joker from Batman, as you're all familiar with White House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid depicted as Cruella de Vil and Scooby-Doo. Ooh, I'm scared already. Jesus Christ, I'm trembling in my bloomers. The document, which two Republican sources said was prepared by the party's finance staff, comes as Chairman Michael Steele struggles to retain the trust and allegiance of major donors who can give as much as $30,400 a year to the party. Well, they can give more than that. Now the Supreme Court has ruled and give it. Well, they can't give it to the party, but they can, you know, they can still get it into the right hands. Under Steele, the RNC has shifted toward a reliance on small donors, but the document reveals extensive confidential details of the strategy of luring wealthy check writers, which range from luxury retreats in California wine country to tickets to a professional fight in Las Vegas. That's what you get if you write them a big check. The 72-page document was provided to Politico by a Democrat who said a hard copy had been left in the hotel hosting the $2,500 a head retreat at the Gasparilla Inn or Gasparilla, depending on where you're from, Inn and Club. Sources at the event said the presentation was delivered by Finance Director Rob Bickhart, Bickhart, and by the RNC Finance Chairman Peter Terpelic, a former ambassador to Luxembourg under George W. The RNC reacted with alarm to a question about it today from Politico, emailing major donors to warn them of a reporter's questions, this reporter, probably Ben Smith, and distancing Chairman Steele from its contents. In an email, RNC Communications Director Doug Hayes said, quote, the document was used for a fundraising presentation. The Chairman Steele didn't attend, nor had he seen the document. Fundraising documents are often controversial. Obviously, the chairman disagrees with the language and finds the use of such imagery to be unacceptable. It will not be used by the Republican National Committee in any capacity in the future. End quote. The most unusual section of the presentation is a set of six slides headed, quote, RNC Marketing 101, end quote. The presentation divides fundraising into two traditional categories, direct marketing and major donors, and lays out the details of how to approach each group. Now, the small donors who are the targets of direct marketing are described under the heading visceral giving. Their motivations for giving are listed as fear, extreme negative feelings toward existing administration, and reactionary. Major donors, the big guns, by contrast, are treated in a column headed calculated giving as opposed to visceral giving. Calculated giving. Their motivations include peer-to-peer pressure, access, and ego-driven. The slide also allows that donors may have more honorable motives, including patriotic duty. A major Republican donor described the state of the RNC's relationship with major donors right now as, quote, disastrous, end quote. With veteran givers beginning to abandon the committee, RNC, which is becoming increasingly reliant on small donors, the party's average contribution in 2009, according to the document, was just $40. Well, that's the way it should be, actually. And the shift toward a financial reliance on the grassroots may help explain Steele's increasingly strident tone toward the Obama administration. While the crude portrayal of Obama may be, as Steele's spokesman puts it, unacceptable, other elements of the presentation may be of equal interest to close political observers. The RNC plans to raise $8.6 million from major donors alone in 2010, which is less than 10% of its total 2009 fundraising take, which was primarily from small donors. And it goes on, the rest of it is kind of boring, but there you go. Now you know what the RNC is going to do this election cycle. You are going to see all kinds of ads, static and video, that will try to convince you that the continuation of Democrats in Congress is something to fear, because the Democrats are taking us to socialism. They just, you know, the Democratic or the Republican National Committee understands the utter ignorance of their contributors, of their rank and file. I'm talking about the small contributors. Anybody with half a brain or with an IQ of room temperature could look at every single thing that Barack Obama has done and realize that what he has done has been to shore up the worst aspects of capitalism. But the RNC people understand their base. Their base are terrified. A lot of them are religious fanatics. They're afraid of their own shadows. They're very easy. If fear is a great motivator, it is. That's one of the reasons that the Bush crime family allowed September 11th, 2001's devastation to occur, because they knew that once that occurred, the rest of it's going to be a cakewalk, boys. Just step back. Let the terrorists do their job. Don't do anything. Just step back. We know what's going to happen. Hey, son of a bitch. Did you see that on the TV? Woo! The RNC knows that their base is scared of its own shadow. Their base is racist, and a lot of you people, Republicans, who listen to the program and just get all pissed off when I call you racist. Oh, stop. Don't send me an email. In the first place, the staff will never let it get through. They'll just delete it. But don't pretend, please don't pretend that the Republican Party, one of its basic planks, is flat out racism. You know, I mean, pretend it on each other, but don't pretend it on me, and don't pretend it on rational or intelligent people. Go talk to each other about how we're not racist. I just don't like Negroes. You know, don't tell me your sad, putrid story. So that's what it's going to be. They're easy to motivate with fear, racism, bigotry, anti-female attitudes. They honestly believe that someday they'll be as rich as Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, which they never, ever will. Ever. Not ever. They wouldn't be able to buy the kind of skin conditioner that Sean Hannity uses, much less be as wealthy as he is. And the wealth of these guys, these right-wingers, of course, comes from jerking the rank and file completely off its axis. I mean, they just do it all the time. And these poor bastards wander around. Yeah, he's a socialist. Oh, where do I set my mind? I love you, Glenn. Thank God for you, Glenn. Ruff, ruff, ruff. Man. So, just thought you might like to know. Watch for it. Watch for it. It's a coming. A soda of bacon goodbye.
Depend on the goodly hearted. Goodly hearted made land change the soul. Can't depend on the sacrament. No Father, no Holy Ghost. You can't depend on any churches unless there's real estate that you want to buy. Can't depend on a lot of things.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Hey, I forgot to mention, Peter Werby is going to drop by and chat a little bit later in the program. Matter of fact, what, top of the next hour? Okay, stick around. Peter Werby left wing talk show host. Peter's not liberal. He's a leftist. I've known Peter for a number of years now. He just got back from Cuba. So Peter and I are going to go all communist on you tonight and talk about Cuber. I don't know how long he's going to stick around, but anyway, that's coming up next hour. Kind of like an eyewitness report as to what's going on. It was the USS Abraham Lincoln. That W pranced across Yeah, check out. Go to Newsweek.com. Take a look at that. Jesus, God. Prairie 2 writes, regarding, you know, changing the money, changing the faces on the money. How ironic, Reagan instead of Grant, Prairie 2 writes. Grant is one of the worst presidents ever, having ended Reconstruction and then pulling out the troops from the South, allowing the rise of the Klan and Jim Crow. He then went on to allow the takeover of the economy by the railroad barons that nearly ended democracy by the end of the 19th century. Reagan started his campaign in Mississippi. Yeah, it was Philadelphia, Mississippi, signaling the resurgence of so-called states' rights. During his term, he refused to enforce the antitrust laws enacted in the 1880s that were designed to fight the corporate takeover and dismantling of Roosevelt's New Deal economy, all of which has led to the end of democracy as we know it. Prairie 2 writes, they should leave Grant on the $50 bill and replace Washington on the dollar bill with Reagan, since he ended what Reagan created, or what Washington created. Put Reagan on the dollar bill because he ended what Washington created. Alexander Hamilton should come off the $10 bill and put Greenspan on, since Greenspan ended the economy that Hamilton created, and replace Lincoln with on the fives with Glenn Beck, and then on coins, replace Lady Liberty with Sarah Palin. Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. Yeah, I like that. And this is kind of interesting. Jim Small, who writes at undertoad57.blogspot.com, undertoad, under T-O-A-D, get it? Undertoad, 57. He said, how amazing is it that scientists can calculate the effect that an 8.8 magnitude earthquake in Chile can have on the rotation of our planet? The ability of human beings to do these amazing things stands in stark contrast with the abysmal lack of human compassion that some people exhibit toward others. What internal mechanism is at work within those who do not display any apparent concern for their brothers and sisters? I'm not puzzled by the motivations that drive political agendas that literally obliterate any concern for the society-wide problems that afflict our middle class and poor populations. The most dramatic example of this has been Senator Jim Bunning's refusal to allow desperately needed extensions to pass to continue a variety of programs for hundreds of thousands of Americans. This harsh attitude is not unusual in our society. Any number of casual encounters will reveal the innate hostility that some people harbor towards those who suffer. A few years ago, a woman told me with a straight face that people who are out of work should not receive any type of assistance, that they should find something or starve, along with their children. This type of sentiment is at the core of the teabagger movement. Look that one up in the Urban Dictionary, and you'll realize why these freaks re-identified themselves as the Tea Party. Right, we understand about teabagging, don't we? Even they realized it was a misnomer for some of them. All this deep hatred and scapegoating is reminiscent of the lynching of people of color throughout our nation's history and the eventual genocide of the Jews and others during the Holocaust. All we need is a severe depression to transform these nutcases into the ruling monsters like those of other horrific eras. Americans who desire the unvarnished truth have to stop accessing the corporate media for their daily news. We have to become truth seekers to identify what is actually transpiring in this ideologically sick corporatocracy. Jim Small writing at Undertoad 57, Undertoad, T-O-A-D, Undertoad 57, .blogspot.com. Yeah, it's a good point. I was also reading something today in the New York Times. I think it was one of the op-ed pieces. Was it Nick Kristof? I forget who it was. But he was, Friedman. I guess it was Friedman. Writing about how we are losing everything where it concerns our ability for innovation, scientific development. He was quoting extensively from John LeBlanc, one of the guys who is well known for his technological. He wasn't talking about Steve Jobs or somebody in that on that level though. about how the United States is absolutely losing its ability to innovate, to compete. We are, he lays out a pretty good example of how all we're trying to, we're even ignoring patching up our broken past while the Chinese are roaring ahead by building a sterling future. That's really going to come and eat us up. You know that, don't you? I wonder how the teabaggers are going to accept complete and total dominance by non-whites. Complete and total dominance, except, you know, for their crazy religion, but the whites' crazy religion. But complete dominance, because that, there's no question that's coming. How are the teabaggers and the patriots going to handle the fact that the dominant culture on this planet very soon is going to be that of the Chinese? That's going to be a rough day. Show up late, or he just decided to hell with Malloy. We'll see. We'll see if he calls in, we'll put him on. Got an email from Larry in Portland, Oregon. He says, Mike, I've been without work for 16 months now. Though I am grateful for the unemployment benefits, there's nothing about being an unemployed worker that I like. As a 50-year-old married father with one 18-year-old son, I had worked a full-time job ever since I was 19 until Bush and the rest of the Republicans caused the mother of all recessions. My family has had to make many sacrifices. The most recent was saying goodbye to our family health insurance 2 months ago. Even with the subsidized COBRA payments that Obama helped pass, we could no longer afford the $230 a month COBRA premium. Making the house payment, groceries, utility bills, etc., has become a real challenge. Listening to Senator Bunning was a joke. However, it was nothing compared to the words spoken by Senator Kyle. I can assure you, Mike, that there has been nothing about being unemployed and on unemployment benefits that I have enjoyed. And while I am thankful for the unemployment benefits, I would much rather be working my union construction job Monday through Friday, 8 hours a day, than being unemployed. What a frickin' warped view of reality Republicans have about workers in America. I hate Republicans and their unbridled arrogance. Larry in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, when I saw those videos of Kyle and Bunning and I thought I was anesthetized to that kind of language because Limbaugh has been doing it for 25 years, just dumping on working, the working class, or poor people, or homeless people, or people who are dedicated to helping other folks. It's astonishing that Limbaugh continues to pull the kind of audience that he claims to pull. And this comes from Dr. Sachs. who is a musician with the Count Basie Band, travels around the world and sends me emails every once in a while. He writes, Brother Barack, he's talking about today's speech. Brother Barack has some big cojones, that's for sure. He's taking them on. The corporate media lashed out heavy on CNN and MSNBC right after his speech today, talking about how he's taking on healthcare companies because he's saying they are the enemy. Well, they have to protect their masters. It's all coming to a head, isn't it? Meanwhile, there are still no jobs, no manufacturing, and doesn't look like there will be. Endless war. As Russia goes, so goes the rest of the world right behind. I wonder what bread lines will be like. At least I could still dance and entertain the rich folk with my saxophone when it all crumbles to the ground. I have so many memories, so many stories about the years I didn't have health coverage, the problems I have with the insurance companies once I got coverage again, and the sheer frustration that I have dealing with my provider. So much that I'm just tired of writing about them. Oh yeah, Mitt Romney, little Richie Rich. The years I had to go to the emergency room. You know, they actually send you a big bill and then they hound you for years and then they ruin your credit. Same with inpatient hospital care. If you need other tests, they'll send you large bills and then have collection agencies call you every day. No, Richie Romney, it's not free going to the emergency room, and it's not great treatment. It's designed to work in extreme emergency circumstances, but it is not designed for medical care. Oh, yeah, Richie Romney, my sister is an emergency room physician and was head of the department for years, so I know what I'm talking about. I saw Mitch McConnell on C-SPAN use the word arrogant, that these people are arrogant and think the American people are stupid and they know what's best. Arrogant? That uppity N-word. Who does he think he is? Stupid? Yeah, the American people are dumber than a worm in the middle of the road. Dumb as hell they are. I'm going back to practicing. Dr. Sachs. I had to say N-word, but he actually used it. But he can. See, he can. He has permission. I mentioned, I think it was Monday or last night, about this new report put out by the Southern Poverty Law Center about the rise of these right-wing terrorist organizations in this country, the Patriot Groups and the Bombers and the Killers and the Racists and so on and so forth. And ABC has picked up on it now. And ABC is reporting on their website that these anti-government sentiments here in the U.S. have reached levels so high they could result in another attack like the Oklahoma City bombing. That's according to the authors of this report, and the authors place part of the blame on people like Lou Dobbs, Glenn Beck, Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, you know, the crowd of right-wing bastards out there. In a statement to ABC News, Lou Dobbs hit back at the director of the group that prepared the report, calling him paranoid. That would be Mark Potok. A host of recent attacks on law enforcement, plots against President Obama, a shooting at Washington, D.C.'s Holocaust Museum are signs of the times, said Mark Potok, the director of the SPLC. Potok made his comments during a teleconference with reporters to promote this annual report on hate group activity in this country. Potok said, quote, we've seen more threats and actual attacks in the past 18 months than we've seen at any given period over the past 15 years. Potok said he blames some public personalities and conservative politicians for inciting fear. He cited Glenn Beck, Lou Dobbs, Michelle Bachmann, Beck for stoking fears that FEMA is running concentration camps, Lou Dobbs for incurring fears about supposed Mexican plots to take over the southwestern United States, Bachmann for making statements about secret political re-education camps, and Sarah Palin for referring to Obama death panels during the health care debate. Potok said, quote, these people help to bring completely groundless conspiracy theories from the margins into the mainstream. And in a phone interview with ABC, Lou Dobbs said, quote, it's sad that Mr. Potok insists upon maintaining his paranoia, and I hope that he recovers. Beyond that, I have nothing to say about the man, end quote. Oh, that is so acidy, Lou. God, you really got him. You got him. Potok says he thinks that the political climate today matches that of the, what he refers to as white-hot tension among anti-government groups prior to the Oklahoma City bombing that killed 168 people in 1995. Oh, man. Yeah, they upset me, too. They really do. But the threat, the real threat to this country for the longest time has always been from the inside, if not forever. I mean, after we took it, after we stole it from Native Americans, and after we built up a certain amount of white people's wealth with the use of slave labor and black people, once we got established, in other words, the threats have always been from within. Who was going to attack the United States of America successfully? Nobody. We'll be right back.
Guard sweet freedom's door. In the dews, the damps, the watchfires of a nation torn by war. Oh, she's far too young to die. You can see it in her eyes. It's time to let the mighty eagle soar. Let the eagle soar. She's never soared before. From
Stop.
Rocky Coast to Golden
Shore. Stop!
The mighty eagle soar. Soar with he.
To the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Al Babe wrote in about Blanche Lincoln. She is a politician who takes literally millions of dollars from special interests like the health insurance mafia. And what he was writing about, there's a blog today at Blue Texan, or by Blue Texan. And I think this was at Crooks and Liars. Blanche Lincoln apparently has fired the opening shots of her primary battle with Bill Halter. Now, Blanche Lincoln is supposed to be a Democrat in Arkansas, right? With a rather incoherent, rambling press release about his supposed wavering on the public option, that her opponent here, Bill Halter, is not backing the public option the way he should. Lincoln's campaign manager, Steve Patterson, says, who does he think he's fooling? Bill is going to find he can't have it both ways. Either he is with the majority of Arkansans and opposed to the public option, like Senator Lincoln, or he is with the national liberal establishment that is angry with her right now, end quote. Now, that doesn't make any sense, any sense at all. The polls show that the majority of people in Arkansas favor the public option, including 81% of Arkansas Democrats. 81% of Arkansas Democrats. So Patterson, Blanche Lincoln's campaign manager, is just a goddamn liar. That's why he's just a liar. But then the press release goes on to criticize her opponent, Bill Halter's support for the Medicare buy-in. And her press release notes that it's not exactly the robust public option his supporters from the blogosphere are calling for and using to raise campaign funds. What? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. As one blogger points out, Lincoln seems to be critical of Halter on health reform for, one, being for a public option, which she opposes in any form, and, two, not being for a robust public option, as some liberal supporters prefer. In other words, Blanche Lincoln is losing her mind. And check out Bill Halter's campaign. I don't have the web address, but I'm sure you can find it. Bill Halter, H-A-L-T-E-R, Bill Halter. It's madness, isn't it? It's just crazy. And it's not just Republicans who have a lock on insanity. Oh, God, no. I hope my attitude about that has come through loud and clear. I don't think it's just that Republicans, all elected Republicans, are latent fascists. Not all Democrats are, although a goodly number is, for sure. Blanche Lincoln is one of them. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to call in. Dave is in Minnesota. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm all right.
Have you recovered from that John Ashcroft thing there?
God.
I was laughing.
Oh, I can't stand that song. Good Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, like between now and election time, you know, anybody that isn't nuts with brainwashing already is just going to be driven over the edge, you know, because it's just going to be one thing after another,
mm-hmm.
you know, a series of lies. And, you know, like in Minneapolis here, we have one station that'll actually broadcast liberal media.
Right.
And it's like they don't have enough squirrels out there spinning the cage to get much of power out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not a 50,000 watt station, no. For sure. But we love them at KTNNF. Thank God they're there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You couldn't do without them. I mean, they do a great job here. We have good local programming that covers all the local stuff, you know, for a couple hours a day. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, couldn't do without it. I mean, it's our lifeline, really. So, anyway. I don't know. What the answer is on the national level, you know, because the media is all bought and paid for by their owners.
Well, just prepare yourself. I think that's recent Politico put this memo and this PowerPoint presentation out there so that people can just get prepared of how, excuse me, how the Republicans are going to try to, and they'll probably succeed. They already have succeeded with a lot of their brain-dead followers. But they're going to push the meme that Barack Obama is a socialist. He's as much of a socialist as he is, I don't know, the president of Yale. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But these Republicans know that their followers are so stupid, they'll buy it. Hey, Dave, I got to leave there. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break.
And even more aspiring to have things and toys and stuff that
oh, no. Are you pissed off at me about something?
Big bass boats were cast in more new tricks and truck than you and I could ever hope to try. They got four-wheel drives to turn. Credit cards just burning, seeking kicks and highs on which you can't rely. There's just one thing satisfying.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Hey, It's about 25 before the hour. We're going to come to your phone calls here in just a second. But another email, this is from Jeff, who wrote in this afternoon, subject line, now here's another reason to never enlist in the military. Dear Mike, as a former Marine who served his country, or corporations, as we may as well call it, during the wars of the Bush crime family over in Iraq, while being exposed to the unknowingly hazardous KBR burn pits and not knowing what ailment I might suffer from in the future, I thought there couldn't be any more reasons not to join the military. Right now, I'm trying to finish my associate degree in electrical technology, and I'm using the 9/11 GI Bill to pay for it. But I received a letter yesterday stating how the VA wants their so-called emergency education payments given out a few months ago to be paid back. Not even bothering to wait until either my graduation or expiration of benefits. As if it wasn't enough that I had to pay $1,800 during my first term of enlistment to use the damn thing, and now they want more money. Hopefully I'll find a job after I graduate and won't be in the desperate situation where I have to re-enlist. Luckily, I have money saved up for this situation, but most veterans aren't so fortunate. Because imagine if you were someone who served in whatever hellhole the damn government sends you to, if you're exposed to toxic waste, if you suffer from PTSD, and you try to better yourself by getting an education while you're unemployed, and then you receive a letter wanting the $3,000 the government gave you to be paid back, even though you desperately need the money for rent and food, along with the tuition expenses that the VA has yet to pay. In short, don't join the military at all. Find some other way of making this world a better place, either by charity, science, peacemaking, or protesting. Sincerely, Jeff. I wonder sometimes how people who join the military with all the promises, not just the promises made by the recruiting people, but the promises that are made about putting the uniform on to begin with. All those promises about what you're really doing when you join the United States military. And then you find out that like so many of these soldiers and Marines and airmen and Navy personnel find out that it's a myth. It's just not true that these are corporate wars, that these are wars that have been started by segments of this society who understand that this society is dying, and they're trying to get as big a piece of the action as they possibly can before it's impossible to do so. And you're a young person for the most part. These are young recruits. You join an elite organization like the Marine Corps, and then you find out once you're in exactly what it is that the modern Marine Corps is about. Not the traditional, not from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. No. You know what I'm talking about. It's got to be rough. And that's why when I read Jeff's email today, I thought, yeah, here's a guy who joined the Marine Corps. And I'm sure did what he was told to do. And survived, as far as he knows. God only knows, like he said in the email, what he's been exposed to. Now he wants to get an education. That was part of the deal, right? And the Veterans Administration is coming after him. Jesus. Charles is in L.A. listening on KTLK. Hey, Charles.
Yes, Mike. You were talking earlier before about somebody wants to replace Ulysses Grant with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go along with that.
Why not?
Grant was the man that reunited the United States, for one thing.
Yeah.
We want to keep him there. And then, but I would think a better choice if you're going to replace somebody I would replace Jackson with Dr. King on a $20 bill.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. King was the man of the 20th century.
There is. I don't think there's any non-white except this woman who apparently was an Indian Native American princess or something. I don't think there's any non-whites on any U.S. money. Is there?
I don't believe so.
Not that I can think of. And as we've talked about in this program before, only because it's a fact that so much of economic power in this country was accumulated because of slave labor. That, you know, I've said before, that's the perfect, to capitalists, that's the perfect situation. Have slaves where you have no labor cost. And the people who set up this country, they knew it. They knew what they were doing. They, mm-hmm. you know, they wrote the Constitution in a way that, you know, it had to be amended. That early Constitution didn't have any Bill of Rights. It didn't have any amendments having to do with freed slaves or the abolishment of slavery. That wasn't there. That wasn't there at all.
Right.
And it was just completely understood, hey, listen, we're going to be this economic powerhouse. Once we kill off all the indigenous people, we're going to be this economic powerhouse because we're bringing European technology. There is no technology in these new United States. This is it's woods and rivers and mountains and fields. You know, we're going to bring technology and we're going to bring slavery and we're going to make a fortune. We're going to become this powerhouse. And they understood. They understood from the beginning what they were doing. That
one thing that was interesting, Mike, was Jamestown almost starved to death.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the settlers either died of disease or went back mm-hmm. until they brought in the started that slave trade, and then they started making some money.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history, as they say. But the one thing that is troubling too, you know, after slavery, you had the legacy of Jim Crow.
Right.
And so much discrimination. In fact, you know, when the Vietnam War started, most black Americans still could not exercise their right to vote.
Mm.
And Martin Luther King helped change that. So he was a very transformative figure. So if I was going to change anybody on any of our currency, he would be the man.
I think that's a good idea. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
All right, man. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, Kennedy and King, JFK and King, if you notice, were both murdered by the power structure in this country once they started to talk about the horror of the American military-industrial complex and how to if not in King's case, it was to stop it completely. In Kennedy's case, it was to slow it down a bit. But once Kennedy showed to those that need to be showed that he was not gung-ho about the Vietnam War and he was not gung-ho about invading Cuba and so on and so forth, and he was trying to find some way of coexisting with communism, with Soviet Union communism, he was murdered. And King, don't forget, King in... Shortly before he was murdered, he was always working for human rights, but his attitude about the most terrorist organization on the face of the earth was his own government. You know, you've heard me say that on this program. That's not an original thought on my part, although I certainly have come to understand what was meant by that. But I think his words were the greatest purveyor of violence on earth. His own government. And that's when it was decided that some patsy had to be found, just like Lee Harvey Oswald. They had to find another three-namer. They came up with James Earl Ray. You got to have them three-namers. John Wilkes Booth, you know, if they're not three-namers, they're not going to serve your purpose for some reason. So they got this poor chump, James Earl Ray, this dumbass cracker who assassinated King, got a passport, went to Canada, I think, then went to London. Did he go to London? Someplace in the UK. He did all this a guy who, I don't know if this is true or not, but he was not very educated. I would imagine he had a hard time finding an airport, much less setting himself up to do all that escaping. You know, that's just one example. Dexter King, MLK's son, and Marty King, another son, here in Atlanta, they had a series of meetings with James Earl Ray before he died in prison where they said, "We don't believe you were involved in the murder of our father." We'll be right back.
Gonna be a delicacy. So lift your chops.
Seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. In about 40 minutes, I guess, we'll have one of Kate Petrini's report cards, our educational correspondent. Steve is in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Mike, two distantly related points. Number one, I saw the, I've heard Daniel Ellsberg talking about Obama and the fact that we need to wake up and recognize that this guy is just another corporate shill. I think the sooner we get rid of our illusions about this guy, the better. If we keep on hoping and praying that somehow he's going to turn out to be the guy, you know, some of us thought he was, we're wasting time and energy. Number two, the most insidious aspect of this healthcare bill that Obama's pushing right now is the fact that it contains these mandates. Now, there are millions and millions of people out there who cannot afford health insurance, including millions of people on Social Security who've turned down Medicare because they take it out of their Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And if they take Medicare, they're going to be living on the street. And so what this bill does, without changing the way that these bastards do business, is to force everybody to buy these crappy plans. And if you don't, you get fined.
Well, isn't that
where...
Or
you get it taken out of your Social Security or taken out of, you know, your tax refund or whatever.
But isn't that where the subsidized insurance...
The subsidies do nothing for people who are 65 or over. Who they'll be forced to go on Medicare, which they can't afford. Moreover, if you listen to Tom Hartman or Paul Krugman, they will explain to you that these subsidies are not in the bill. Everybody talks about them, but they're not there. They simply are not there. It's a fraud.
Hmm. So there's nothing good about this this attempt at health insurance reform. Nothing.
Absolutely not. It does not change the way these bastards do business, but it forces you to buy their crappy policies. And if you don't, you get fined. It's a fraud.
Hmm.
And the other thing that nobody talks about is the fact that Michelle Obama, until 2 weeks before the Democratic convention, was getting paid $500,000 to be a highly paid public relations flack for one of the most egregious HMOs in the country. And we expect to get health care reform from these people?
Well, I don't know anymore. I feel like I'm so far out of the argument or out of the loop. I don't know what's real anymore. When I watch Obama like I did today, I watched him on television today give a speech in front of these medical people. You know, I don't have the bill in front of me. The 1600, is that how big it is? Page bill. I don't know what's in there, but when I hear him talk, it makes sense. And you're
but
saying,
Mike, I hate to sound like a Glenn Beck listener, which I'm not.
Right.
But Hitler was good at this too. Hitler was a great public speaker.
Right. Well,
he was a fabulous public speaker. So, by the way, was Mussolini. You know, and I abhor these people, and Glenn Beck is, you know, Satan incarnate as far as I'm concerned. But let's wake up and smell the coffee about this guy. everything this guy has proposed is right in line with Republican agenda, with conservative agenda. Now the conservatives in the Congress hate him merely because he's black, as you pointed out many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, the liberals and progressives who are still holding on to the shards of hope that this guy's the real thing, wake up!
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree with that. I just figured that, you know, like Clinton. Clinton was certainly a Republican from the word go.
Absolutely.
And, you know, put in place an awful lot of Republican ideas. And Obama is talking about how he's proud of the fact that this health bill has a bunch of points that were brought up by Republicans. And anyone knows, or everyone should know, that Republicans don't give a damn about health insurance, just like they didn't give a damn about getting people off welfare during the Clinton era. So what Clinton did was just use the Republican approach, and that is just kick people off and to hell with you. If you have to live in the street, you live in the street.
And while all this is going on, let's remember this guy has escalated the war in Iraq. He's escalated the war in Afghanistan. He's moved the war into Pakistan. He's escalated the war in Colombia. He's continuing the war, the American support of the right-wing forces in the Horn of Africa, and he is escalating the invasion of our privacy and our civil liberties with the Patriot Act and the warrantless wiretapping. Let's not forget that.
And the right-wingers still refer to him as a socialist.
Exactly. I mean, this is absurd. But it's not the right-wingers I'm worried about anymore. It's the progressives and the liberals who simply will not wake up and smell the coffee.
I hear you.
Well, thanks for listening, Mike.
All right, Steve. Thanks. Appreciate you checking in. What to do about it? Anybody got any ideas? I'm just empty where it concerns ideas. What does Hartman say? Anybody know? What does Tom Hartman say? He has ideas. No, he does. He does. He has ideas. We need to get bracelets made, WWTS, or WWTD. What would Tom do? I guess I need to call him. See, I can call him up and get a private consultation. I wonder if he'd send me a bill. I bet he would. I bet he would. Does he charge for counseling? You know, not the kind of counseling from a therapist, but, you know, counseling on what is real. Does Hartman still know what's real? I don't anymore. I think Tom still does. I think Tom Hartman still understands what's real. I guess I don't. The only time I hear his program, obviously, is when I'm out and about and tune into Sirius. But I wonder if Tom could help us out. What do you think, Kathy? We need to call him. Ask him what's real. Because I don't know, and obviously, I mean, our callers seem to know what's real. But I don't know, it's getting very confusing.
We need something like the bat signal, the Hartman signal, shine up in the sky.
Shoot it up into the sky.
It'll come swooping down.
Let me see if I can do that during the break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. If you're online, we'll take your call. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. A couple of emails about Steve's call. A caller from L.A. about there's no there there where it concerns the health insurance reform package that the Democrats are about to pass. Prairie 2 writes, the current bill does little for immediate reform except end the rescission, the corporate death panels, and pre-existing conditions. All other provisions don't take effect for years anyway. It does establish a base to build on, and some states are moving towards single payer, and this bill allows for that. And that's where the real hope resides. Of course, thanks to Republican judges in the court, states have been blocked from doing that up to this point. If it gets, if this bill gets more Democrats into Congress, then there's a good chance more will be done. If the Republicans get back in, then the canned goods won't last long. All right. So there is the insurance exchange and these other things that I hear Obama talking about, but they don't kick in for a while. Karen writes, Mike, the caller Steve is claiming there are no subsidies and that people will be out on the streets is wrong. Tom Hartman clears these kinds of calls by telling them that they will receive subsidies, as any of you, and you yourself probably know as well. It sounds like you might just be playing with him, Karen. No, I honestly, thanks, Karen, I honestly don't know. I listened to Obama today talk about how, well, it ends pre-existing condition requirements. It ends the ability of insurance companies to jack up your payments if you file a claim. But that's about as much as I know. What I can't, and I don't want to sound like a Republican here. I'd rather cut off my own head than sound like a Republican. But why does it need, is it 1,600 pages or is that an exaggeration? I mean, why can't this health insurance reform bill, And this is a legitimate question. Why can't it all be written out on 10 pages, 5 pages? What? And I don't want the standard answer, where somebody says to me, well, Mike, it's because they're bureaucrats. That doesn't mean anything to me. That means nothing. That sounds like something a Republican would say. What is in 1,600 pages that can be boiled down to 3 or 4 changes in, how health insurance is delivered? That's why I say I've got to call Hartman and ask him what the hell's going on. I don't have a clue. Chris is in Nanaimo, British Columbia. Is that right? Nanaimo?
Nanaimo, actually.
Nanaimo. Hey, Chris. Oh, yeah, we've talked before. Hi.
Hi. Two answers for you, one that came up while the other caller was on the line. The first one is, Bob and you have been wondering what we're going to do about this idiocracy scenario that we're coming into, where we just seem to be breeding for idiots and nobody's trying to do something in the opposite direction.
Right.
Talk to some biology friends of mine, and their answers are animal husbandry. When you farm an animal to eat it, you separate it out into two flocks, an A flock and a B flock. The B flock is for eating, and the A flock is for improving the herd, as it were.
Right.
You select out whatever traits you want, either wool production, meat production, milk production, whatever. And you breed for that characteristic in a very much smaller A flock. Unfortunately, you've got all these other A flocks in a human population that are breeding for susceptibility to religion, susceptibility to Scientology, which I'm not too sure what it is, and so forth and so on. The second one is that gentleman who called up and said, we're going to be forced to buy expensive health care or Medicare. Well, there is a workaround to that that we discussed on the chat in your chat room. Start up a not-for-profit company that charges $1 for insurance and provides absolutely no coverage. But at least then you're covered, and you don't have to pay the fine. All they do is issue you this lovely embossed thing that, you know, sell for a buck or two, that says, I am covered by insurance by no insurance company. And that's the workaround for that.
All right, somebody's getting a little bit loosey-goosey in the chat room, right?
An aspiring, it's better than the solution that Barack Obama's playing chess and not checkers, that he wants all the insurance companies to trade across straight lines so that they all eventually merge and it eventually becomes single payer, at which point he can simply just nationalize it. It becomes a national branch, and they just now work for the government, not for ATCA or whatever the company's called.
Well, you know, I would like to see single payer. I don't know if that's the direction that Obama is pushing this thing. Very.
Well, it would kill a lot more Americans that way.
But. I'm sorry.
Well, if he goes the let them all merge and then just declare them a single payer by default anyway, that would kill an awful lot of Americans in the transgress, because eventually there's going to be a period of a year or two where there's just two competitors and they're going to collude. And how many Americans is that going to kill? So, again, it depends on what kind of man you think Obama is.
It's pretty,
he's willing to pull the trigger on several million American lives to get a political expediency.
In other words, it's pretty bleak, right, Chris?
Oh, yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, all right.
But I don't live in your country, but so
that's,
I don't.
That's true, you don't. All right, thanks, Chris. I appreciate you checking in, I think. I'm kind of lost tonight. I'm not sure what what Chris just said either. Maybe I need more coffee. Marty is somewhere listening on XM. Hey, Marty.
Hello, Mike. Hello, you. Irish Catholic boy, you?
Yeah?
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't realize Barack Obama was a right-wing racist conservative.
Hey, listen, you're going to have to do better than that. We can't hear you. It's all static. I don't know what to tell you, Marty. I'm sorry. I'd like to hear what you got to say, but all I hear is static and your voice in the background. If you can get to a different location or cell or something, give us a call back. Gerald is in Detroit. Let's see on XM. Hey, Gerald.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Well, I noticed Peter Werby never did call in, but I wanted to tell you something. I used to, a long time ago, listen to his show on the local classic rock station.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably that show and the fact that one time he played a show on the 60s folk singer Phil Oakes.
Right, right.
That pushed me into the way to the left of the political spectrum where I am now.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I started listening to your show when you were on 1310 AM here in this market. And I bought an XM radio so I could listen to you again.
Well, bless your heart.
So that was one thing I wanted to say. I wanted to also mention what's going on with me and unemployment here.
Okay.
I've been drawing unemployment payments since the middle of August.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still working, but I'm only working part-time and making about a third to two-thirds of what I was making depending on the week.
Mm-hmm.
Because the company I was working for was undercut on the bid for a job we were at.
Right.
They hired somebody else for $2 an hour less.
Mm.
And so I'm still working for the same company, but I'm not getting full-time hours. But it looks like that once my regular 26 weeks expire, even if I get an extension, I'm going to have to apply for three jobs a week in order to keep getting the payments.
Do you live in the city of Detroit or in the suburbs?
I live in the suburbs. I work right on the edge of Detroit, so I pay Detroit taxes.
Right. What? How do you find three jobs in Detroit?
Well, I don't. I have to put in applications for them, or at least attempt to get them and document that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going to go on in the future. If I get any offers for anything, I have to take them, even if it means not being able to do the current job I have.
Hey, can you hold on, Gerald? Because
yeah.
I want to ask you a couple more things when we come back from this break. Main thing I want to ask you, I'll ask you now, and you can think of how you want to answer it. But how much? I guess the question is, how much more of this can you take? Of trying to put together jobs and trying to pay your bills and stay afloat, because I know you've called before. I know you know Peter, regular listener to this program, and I just got to ask you that. I'll come right back, Gerald, after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Well, it looks like Steve, was it Steve from L.A.? I don't think we're going to take any calls from him for a while because doing a little research on Michelle Obama, she was never a lobbyist for anybody. Ever. So I don't know why Steve said that. You know, somebody tosses something like that out. I don't have the facts right in front of me about everything. But no, she was never. She was a salaried board member of Treehouse Foods Incorporated, which is traded in New York Stock Exchange, which is a major Walmart supplier with whom she cut ties immediately after her husband made comments critical of Walmart in May of 2007. She serves on the board of directors of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. You know, it really pisses me off. It does when somebody calls the program and, you know, says crap that's not true. Barry writes in, Mike, I have no problem with questioning policies of the Obama administration, but the caller, Steve from L.A., said a whole bunch of stuff that's not true. Michelle Obama, lobbyist, first I've ever heard of this. And the forcing people to sign up for health care is real, but so are the plans to ensure people who cannot afford it to get a break. The caller grossly misrepresented what's in the health care reform bill as passed by the House. It is it very confusing, as you said after the caller hung up? Yes, indeed it can be. All I know is speculation of false accusations that I heard from that caller are not truth-seeking behavior in my book. By all means, though, let us continue to question policies of the Obama administration. Barry. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just kind of not in the mood to get all involved in questioning and challenging people tonight. I don't know. Gerald, so, trying to cobble together, you know, I grew up in the Detroit area in Toledo, and I spent an awful lot of time there. I'm going to be back in that neighborhood this September, but how are you doing it? How are you putting all this stuff together? How much longer can you keep going?
Well, I'm actually not as bad off as a lot of people I know. There are people that make more money than I do, but don't manage to have as much left at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because I've managed to avoid getting into debt on anything.
Mm-hmm. Do you rent or own your home or buy?
Well, right now I live with my girlfriend who has a mortgage on her house.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is she's out of work right now too.
Mm-hmm.
And drawing unemployment. So it's the fact that I'm there that keeps the electric bill paid.
Right. So the two of you are maintaining her mortgage and the bills that you both accumulate.
Right.
What are her prospects for work?
Well, she's constantly contacting through contract houses to try and get jobs. She does design databases.
Mm-hmm.
For a living, so she's constantly getting calls, but a lot of them don't pan out. And a lot of them that have only been short-term projects.
Has there been a time in your life where you worked for a company and you had health insurance and maybe a week's paid vacation, a few holidays? Did you ever experience that?
I've never actually had much for benefits from where I've worked. The company I work for now, the vision benefits are pretty good, but the medical they offered I didn't think was worth my effort.
Mm-hmm.
The plan that was offered it seemed like it charged me more money every month than I would ever possibly get in benefits, so I just passed it by.
How long have you lived in the Detroit area?
I've been living around the suburbs of Detroit since I was very little. I moved here from Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I was out there is that's where my father was stationed in the Army when I was born.
Mm-hmm. So you've lived in Detroit all your life.
Yeah.
Do you think Detroit is going to make a comeback?
You know, unless they do something about trade policies where we can actually manufacture things, I think it's doubtful.
Yeah, that's a shame. I remember when Detroit was, I don't know, around 2 million population. It was just a huge behemoth of a city, and I realize that's not the case anymore. Well, thanks for holding on. Thanks for talking to us, Gerald. I appreciate your sharing some of your personal stuff there. I just, I always get curious about how people are doing. You know, we've Kathy and I have had times in our lives where it's just been an absolute struggle. Both of us on unemployment. When she was pregnant, you were, what, 6 months pregnant. We're both on unemployment, had a mortgage payment, car payment, truck payment. Jesus, God. Huh? Yeah, you were six months pregnant. That was weird. Kathy, we both had to attend these meetings. Georgia Department of Labor make you go to these meetings to teach you how to go find a job. It was madness. It was insanity. I kept saying, you're going to find me a job at CNN or in radio? What, you know? And Kathy was like almost 7 months pregnant.
I used to walk in and say, gee, I don't know. I keep turning in resumes and just
nobody
don't,
hires
they take
me.
One look at me and they just don't seem interested. The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, Prairie Two again writes in answer to that question I had about why is this 1,800 or 1,600 page bill, whatever it is. Prairie 2 says the page count is high thanks to the Republicans. Each section of the bill, a bill, goes before a subcommittee, and they go through it line by line. The Republicans were there with reams of paper, and much of it was added to the bill. The material they added was mostly the spelling out in minute detail things that could be written as rules by the agencies that handle the enacting of the law, which these same committees get to approve or disapprove later. By adding it into the law ahead of time, into the bill ahead of time, it makes the bill longer. The real bill would be a couple of hundred pages, tops. But the Democrats couldn't refuse to include this level of detail without appearing to freeze the Republicans out, and the rat bastards knew it. Oh, okay, well, there you go. Thank you, Prairie 2. So that's why when they talk about it's a 1,700 page bill, it is because they made it that. Now, see, how many people know that? Did you know that, Truth Seeker? I damn sure didn't. Tom writes regarding caller Steve from L.A., the subject line here, Medicare mandatory for seniors? Tom writes, I am disabled for 10 years and live and a lot. Let me start again. I am disabled for 10 years and alive and better thanks to Medicare that costs $96 a month of my $1,200 income per month. I've been blessed with a $500 rent and food stamps of $90 a month and some side work for a few hundred per month and Medicaid. Seniors like my mom can take care of all expenses through supplemental AARP Plan G and up, but that was $240 when mom was in her 80s, let alone the fact that she's now 93. But so many, including me, are doomed group by group. But this guy, Steve, on the radio is a little out there about Medicare doing seniors in, I think. But then again, people's living expenses are far greater than my rental apartment, electricity, phone, and cell phone. No cable. Tom. All right, we have, do you have some music for Kay's report card? Can we find some, I want to do this. before we go back to calls.
Teach your children well, cause their father's hell did slowly go by.
From Kate Petrini, a report card, our education affairs correspondent. A report card on what's the point. Hi, Mike. My experience in the classroom the other day can be boiled down to one statement. What's the point? In U.S. history, I'm showing the film Iron-Jawed Angels. The movie dramatically portrays the struggle of the American suffragettes back in the early part of the 20th century. This from the film's synopsis. Quote, Iron-Jawed Angels tells a remarkable, little-known story of a group of passionate, dynamic young women led by Alice Paul and her friend Lucy Burns, who put their lives on the line to fight for American women's right to vote. Wartime fervor turns public opinion against the suffragettes, who are arrested on the trumped-up charge of obstructing traffic, even though their White House picket line is on the sidewalk. Refusing to pay a fine for the crime they didn't commit, the women are sentenced to 60 days in a Virginia women's prison. Miss Paul eventually leads the suffragettes on a hunger strike, causing the warden to begin force-feeding them. Word of the force-feeding leaks out, and public opinion shifts in favor of the suffragettes. The women are released from prison as President Wilson comes out in favor of the suffrage amendment in a congressional speech. This true story has startling parallels to today, as the young activists struggle with issues such as the challenges of protesting a popular president during wartime and the perennial balancing act between love and career. End quote. That last sentence has rung true every time I've showed this film. The director has not simply told a story about events at the turn of the 20th century. She also has brilliantly woven an allegory about the United States at the turn of this century. From the Patriot Act to the invasion of Iraq to the labeling of anyone opposing the war as unpatriotic to the concept that protesting a so-called wartime president constitutes treason to the realities of Guantanamo and on and on. In the 5 years that I've shown this film in my classes, I've always been able to make the connection between then and now fairly easily. Students were aware of 9/11, the war in Iraq, and the conflation of those two events. Many students were aware of the Patriot Act, and some even knew about the treatment of prisoners at Guantanamo. This year, however, things are different. The movie's connection to current events is being lost. I wish I could say this is because President Obama has brought our troops home, or restored rights abridged under the Patriot Act, or closed Guantanamo. But as you know, that isn't the case. The sad fact is, these issues are fading into oblivion because the American press, and by extension the American public, just don't give a damn about it anymore. The hubris of this country is breathtaking. Americans embraced 8 years worth of lies about the great and glorious obligation of the United States to stop the terrorists and spread democracy, only to have young people just a few years later be totally unaware of the consequences of Bush's so-called mission accomplished. In just a few short years, the bill of goods sold to the American people by the Bush crime family has become utterly meaningless. Countless lives lost, countless billions spent, with more to come. Now, what's the point again? Okay.
Teach your children well, cause their father's hell did slowly go by.
Kate Petrini is our education affairs correspondent. She's a school teacher in San Francisco. Back to your phone calls. Dave is in St. Louis listening on XM. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. How's it going? Love this.
Moving along.
Sorry. Hey, I think we need to nominate Reagan for his own bill, and I nominate him for the $3 bill. But besides that, have you ever looked at coins? I know I'm not a conspiracy nut, but if you ever look at the quarter, the dime, the nickel, and the penny.
Uh-huh.
The lowest denominator is the penny, and you know who's on that, Lincoln.
Lincoln, right.
Also, it's a darker colored coin compared to the other three.
Right.
And if you look at the heads on the coins, Lincoln is looking a different way, like the others have turned their back on Lincoln.
Oh, really?
For freeing the slaves. Pull them all out, look at them. Lincoln's facing the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
The other three presidents are looking to the right. Lincoln's looking to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln's on the dark-colored coin, and he freed the slaves, and it's the lowest common, you know, the lowest denomination of money.
But isn't it also the most frequently, or it used to be, the most frequently carried or traded or used coin of the realm, pennies?
I'm sure back in the day it were.
Right.
But now it's
almost obsolete, right?
Right.
Right. So your point is that they...
But you were saying something, one caller said something about Martin Luther King being on the $20 bill.
Right,
you said something about no colored person besides the Sacagawea has, you know, there been anybody of color on a coin. And if you look at actually the only person that had anything to do with the black people is on a coin that's totally opposite of any of the other colored coins besides the Sacagawea.
Right, right. Well,
so it's kind of I'm not conspiracy nut, but it's kind of ironic.
Well, that's a good point. Do you collect coins?
No, a friend of mine of color had told me about this a long time ago, and I started looking at it, and I'm like, he was absolutely right. That the penny, you know, when Lincoln was on, you know, it's pressed on it.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I wonder if there's any truth to that. That it was some way of kicking Abraham Lincoln's ass for being a civil libertarian and doing whatever he did to free the slaves, although we can get into a big discussion about that, too, I guess. All right, thanks, Dave.
Have a good one.
All right, man, I appreciate you checking in, for sure. Gary is in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
You and Tom are the two programs that I try to listen to every day.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I've been listening for a long time. The calling regarding the caller, whoever, whatever his name was, Steve or Rick or whatever it was.
Yeah, Steve.
And, you know, I'm a truck driver. I'm not an attorney, and I'm not the sharpest pencil in the drawer. But I tend to, when I see people that lie to me, I don't put a lot of trust in them. And
right.
When I find people that I can't find a lie that I may not agree with everything they said, but I can't find them lying to me, I continue to listen.
Right.
And you and Tom and Bernie Sanders and Governor Dean are some of those, and all of you, I mean, not you so much, but the other three, have all, while they don't like every part of this bill and so forth, there's flaws, are pretty much in favor of it and support it and stuff. And when I find whiners like Cantor and McConnell, like you said a while back, well, you know, I'm in favor of it just because...
Hey, hold on just a second, Gary. I got to take a break here. Stay right there. I'll come right back. Talking to Gary, weren't we? In Cheyenne. All right, Gary.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah,
you made a comment a long time ago that if Mitch McConnell was for something, you'd be against it, or
right.
I don't remember exactly. And I think that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's pretty good for me. When they're against it, I'm for it. You know, my senator out in Wyoming, when he gets up on that, I listen to him brassle, get up there and lie on, you know, and I caught him absolutely lying when he said talked about this Canadian cabinet or Canadian congressman or whatever it was that had to come down here for health care. I know he's lying because I have called him on it, and he won't back it up. He won't give me the reference for it or who it is or anything. And that what he's talking about is that person came down here for cosmetic surgery after she was done with the cancer treatment up there, because the cosmetic surgery down here was something that she could afford and pay for herself, and their plan up there doesn't pay for that.
Well, you know, and I know, and I've mentioned this before, Gary, every single member of Congress who's a Republican lies all the time. Democrats lie some of the time, but Republicans lie all the time. It is their nature. They are incapable of telling the truth. Gary, I got to move on. Thanks, man. I appreciate what you had to say, and drive safe. Sounds like you're hauling across the country tonight, so drive safe, okay? Paul writes in, Mike, apparently the best-kept secret about Obamacare is that people talk about the elimination of pre-existing conditions, but what people do not realize is that the bill does not say that the insurance companies cannot charge you what they want to charge you if you have a pre-existing condition. So there goes the benefit of that change, and the politicians know it. As far as subsidies go, you and I both know the Republicans and the media are setting up for a political change in Congress in 2010. Once Republicans gain more control, they will cut or hack many subsidies. And don't forget that the Republicans cut the CHIPS program for children's health care. And last, they did not remove the insurance corporation's antitrust exemptions. So welcome to the monopolies. Chains we can believe in? Paul, I don't know. I really don't. I just don't know what... I thought there was to be a limit on, well, maybe, I guess not. I'm totally lost in this subject. I really am. Now that the particulars, it seems like an awful lot of people listening to this program have a lot more information about this than I do, and that's the way it should be. Hank is in Berkeley, California. Hey, Hank.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
I'm as confused as you are. I certainly wouldn't take any advice from the lying liberal left on radio.
What?
You know what I mean by it is this.
No, wait. What? What?
The liberal left that gets on and pretends it's left.
Like who?
Well, like the Herman Goering on radio of the right, of the left, what's that fat man guy name? Ed Schultz.
You don't like Ed?
No, it's not that I don't like him. I don't understand.
Well, Ed is
on like this.
Yeah, well, Ed is not. He's not a liberal or a leftist. So it's.
But he said that the other day.
Oh, I don't think he would ever claim to be a liberal or a leftist, Hank. Ed Schultz, if you just listen to his program, I mean, he's a flat-out conservative. You don't want to judge the left in talk radio by the Ed Schultz show. I just don't think that's a good idea.
Well, in a well-known fact, for instance, that Obama took money from Wall Street before the election.
Yeah, he did.
Okay. So why wouldn't he sing to their tune?
Well, that's true. I mean, and that's what a lot of people are saying. I've been talking about that. I talked about it before he was elected. That Obama.
So why is it so hard for you to think about getting somebody's advice? What do we do from now? Well, the only thing we do, we have left as a choice, is try to build a third party, which we all know is practically impossible.
Or find Democrats who are real liberals. Don't forget the base of the Democratic Party is liberal and progressive. It always has been. Well, not always. I mean, come on. But it has been for the past 100 years. It is liberal and it is progressive. So, third party will take, oh, I don't know, maybe 20, 30, 40 years. Whether or not it's worth the struggle is up to the people who might get involved in that struggle. The other way to do it is to start fielding candidates in the Democratic Party who are real Democrats, who are liberal progressives, who have, as all liberal Democrats do, a predilection for social democracy or democratic socialism, and elect those people. Those would be legitimate Democrats. What we have now in so many instances in the Democratic Party are not Democrats. I mean, we know that. So I agree with you, Hank. To build a new party would be take some work. If people want to spend 30 or 40 years on that, okay. But I think the structure is already there in the Democratic Party. It just needs to be what it was intended to be to begin with, or certainly in the past 60, 70, 80 years. Hank, I got to leave there. Thanks, man. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you burdened with